Greetings. Welcome to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, here in WILL AM 580, based in beautiful Urbana, Illinois. Today we're going to be talking about what has become a major institution in the Urbana-Champaign area, the Independent Media Center, based in downtown Urbana. We're going to have a full show talking about it as it approaches its 10th anniversary, discuss where it's been and where it's going. It should be a great program, so please sit back, relax, and join us. But before we start that, let's go to Media Minutes.
Any views or opinions expressed by the hosts of Media Minutes are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, its management, or licensee.
Welcome to Media Minutes. I'm Stevie Converse.
And I'm Candace Clement.
And I'm Megan Tatey.
T-Mobile told a federal court in New York that it had the right to pick and choose which text messages it carries over its network. T-Mobile is being sued by Easy Texting, a company that serves as a marketing platform for businesses, political campaigns, contests, or any group that wants to keep in touch. It's the first federal case testing whether wireless providers are allowed to block text messages they don't like. One of Easy Text's clients was weedmaps.com, a website that allows its subscribers to find licensed medical marijuana dispensaries. T-Mobile decided that it didn't want to carry text messages from Weedmaps and told Easy Texting to drop the site as a client. Easy Texting complied with T-Mobile's demand immediately, but then T-Mobile cut off Easy Texting entirely, leaving all of its clients without service. Efforts to negotiate with T-Mobile went nowhere. Texting services use what are called short codes, five-digit numbers that are rented out to companies and organizations. Think voting for your favorite American idol or signing up for a church group that lets you know when there's an event happening. Michael Weinberg is a staff attorney with Public Knowledge, which has been urging the Federal Communications Commission to create good protections for text messaging services.
When you sign up to get your short code, you have to tell each individual carrier exactly what you're going to be sending. And those carriers have the ability to approve or reject your idea. And also, if you change what you're going to do or expand what you're going to be sending out, they claim the right to then go back and be able to reject you after the fact.
Weinberg says it's the equivalent of being able to buy a phone only after you tell the phone company who you're going to call and what you're going to talk about.
If they did that with phone numbers, that would be illegal. And so that's part of what we're trying to get the FCC to do, is to recognize that just as it's illegal with phone numbers, it should be illegal with text messages. Well, I don't see why businesses should need to justify their existence to wireless carriers if they want to use text messaging.
Weinberg's fear is that the courts could step in if the FCC doesn't act soon.
What I hope happens is the FCC recognizes this finally and says that this is something that needs to be decided and needs to be clarified. Because if T-Mobile's position prevails, you have a situation where you need to ask carriers for permission to speak. And that is just not a viable way to operate critical communications infrastructure.
A preliminary ruling on whether Easy Texting can continue its service on T-Mobile on a temporary basis is expected this week. To find out more, go to publicknowledge.org.
When Sam Bennett ran for mayor in 2001 and for Congress in 2008, she was astounded by the level of sexism she experienced from her opponents and the media. In one of the most egregious examples, Bennett was interrupted while delivering a speech and asked by another political leader to give her body measurements.
What I call is a media misogyny that I experienced, and the misogyny from both sides of the aisle that I experienced, I found to be absolutely breathtaking. After my race, I said, you know what, after this, I'm going to focus on making sure that no woman ever has to go through what I went through when I ran for Congress.
Since then, Bennett, now the director of the nonprofit Women's Campaign Forum, has teamed up with several other organizations to create the Name It, Change It campaign. The campaign is calling out the increased sexism and misogyny by the media aimed at female political candidates. The Women's Media Center and the organization Political Parity are also working on the campaign. In a blog post written by Bennett, she says, "No longer will we sit idly by while reporters analyze the wardrobe of women leaders instead of their achievements."
A real recent one is Spike.com, described Kirsten Gillibrand as one of the top 10 hottest feminists in America. Well, the problem is she's a senator and needs to be seen as a leader. And when incidences like a major talk show host referring to Mary Landrieu as a high-class prostitute on the air, we will alert people to when those incidents happen, we will guide them to action that they can take, and we'll inform them of the action we are taking so that we can name it, and by naming it, we can change this.
The campaign recently released research that found that even mild sexist language has an impact on voters' likelihood to vote for a female candidate. Bennett said that fighting sexism aimed at female political candidates and leaders is a nonpartisan issue.
When any woman is attacked, all women are a test. If we believe in the basic precept that we urgently need more women in elected office in this country, then we need to make sure that we are creating the right soil, the right systems, so that's even possible. Unless we fight these incidences, which dramatically impact a voter's ability to see her as a leader, we're not ever going to see any women ascend.
To find out more information and join the campaign, visit nameitchangeit.org.
You've been listening to Media Minutes, a production of Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization working to reform the media. For more information, visit freepress.net.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host and the participants.
Greetings. Welcome back to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, here on WILL AM 580 this October 3rd, 2010. And I'm coming to you from Campbell Hall today on the campus of the University of Illinois. We have a pre-recorded show. We taped this shortly before going on air because we wanted to make sure we got it on air in October. So don't call in today. Sit back and relax and let me talk with our guest about the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center. Our guests today are Belden Fields, Professor Emeritus from the Department of Political Science at the University of Illinois, well-known, I think, to many people in this community for years of service to the community. And also Carol Ammons, who is the supervisor of the AmeriCorps Volunteers for the Independent Media Center. She's also a member of the Champaign County Board, a co-founder of the CU Citizens for Peace and Justice, and also the host of the show Higher Ground, heard on our companion station, WEFT, every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. Pleasure to have both of you here.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for your work with the Independent Media Center here in Urbana-Champaign. And for full disclosure, I should let it be known that I am on the board of the Independent Media Center. Also, and even more full disclosure, I think it should be known that I'm the worst board member in the history of any organization, not just the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center. Let's start, Belden, with a little bit of the history. The IMC movement in general that led to the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center, because this is sort of a very interesting history. And talk a little bit about where did they start, why did they start, and how did we get one in Urbana-Champaign?
All right. Well, the beginning of the IMC movement was in 1999 in Seattle at the World Trade Organization. And there were people who went to demonstrate against the policies of the World Trade Organization. They felt that it was very unfair to labor, its policies, that both in the industrialized countries and in the lesser industrialized countries, it was very beneficial for business and financial institutions, but harmful in many respects to others. There was some violence that occurred in Seattle. I myself cannot affirm whether it was initiated by the police or by a certain number of people who were there to protest. But in any case, the vast majority of the people, that included both young people and a lot of people from the labor movement who went there, the AFL-CIO, to protest, the feeling was that the dominant media that covered it tended to give a very distorted image of what went on in the streets in Seattle. Mm-hmm. Some of our people locally went out to participate in those. And they came back feeling that there had to be a certain kind of alternative. Now, it wasn't only the people who came back to us, but people who had been there from around the country also came to the conclusion that the dominant media was just distorting the situation. And the only way to remedy that was to create an alternative media so that a very different point of view could be presented to the public. There are a certain number of the people, some of whom you know, like Sasha Meinrath,
mm-hmm.
Bob,
sure.
Decided that we should create an IMC locally. And I remember getting a call from Sasha saying he wanted to talk to me to test an idea. And we discussed it, and he did that with a number of other people. The School for Designing a Society, which is an organization that's now housed in the mm-hmm. Media Center, was also very much involved in this. And what we did 10 years ago initially was just open up a storefront on Main Street in Urbana. And then at the very beginning, we initiated a website there. And in order to generate a little money, we had a room in the back where we presented shows and performances, and people mm-hmm. could pay. It was never a lot, but people could pay something to help keep us going.
Places like that are always much more romantic in retrospect than they were at the time. I mean,
they were romantic, but I'll tell you what broke our romanticism was the Urbana Fire Department, which came in and said, this building is really unfit.
Well, I remember I gave a talk there once, and the temperature of the room was about 230 degrees.
Yeah.
You could cook dinner while you smoke.
Right. It was great in the wintertime. In any case, then our thinking evolved that we needed a much larger place to do this and a better place mm-hmm. to do this. And we have to give credit to Danielle Chenoweth, mm-hmm. Who began scouting out other possibilities. And she saw that the U.S. government wanted to sell the post office here in Urbana, the old historic post office.
Yeah, the beautiful building there.
The beautiful building. So she negotiated, and she negotiated over a period of several months, and she got the price down to where we thought we could afford it. It was a very, very adventurous step we took in buying that. And I think the price we paid was what you might pay for one of the newer large houses that are being constructed.
Well, it was negotiated at a time when real estate prices were somewhat higher than they are today.
Yes, they were. They were. And the fund that we're creating, the Sustainer Fund, and I want to talk about the event we're going to have, is largely to help us in that regard,
yeah.
Both because of our own operations in it and because we regard ourselves as the stewards of a magnificent building, and we want to keep that building in very good shape. So we have created a sustainer fund, of which I'm one of the co-chairs. The other is Dolores Henry, the former superintendent of mm-hmm. school in Champaign. And we have a committee of about six people who are engaged in this endeavor, because what we think we need to do is we need to get out to the public what goes on in that building, because it's really a formidable array of activities, both in terms of media work and in terms of the arts in general. And that's not generally known.
And yeah, let me stop you right there, sure. If I can, Belden Fields, and just let our listeners know I'm Bob McChesney. This is Media Matters, October 3rd, 2010, here in WILL AM 580. We're doing a special program today to commemorate the 10th anniversary of the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center. Our guest, Belden Fields, who you've just been listening to, is the chair of the fundraising committee.
Co-chair.
I don't want to slight the other person, I'm sure.
Dolores Henry.
Dolores would be very upset about that. and also Carol Ammons joining us, who's the supervisor of the AmeriCorps Volunteers for the IMC and also a member of the Champaign County Board. We're recording this show a few days before going on air, so please don't call in today. And one of the points we're talking about, in addition to commemorating the 10th anniversary, is, as Belden Fields has already mentioned, is that this is also the period of the Sustainer Fund appeal that's very important to pay for the mortgage on this beautiful post office. That's a big part of it, and helping pay the operational cost.
Right.
And also an emergency fund for problems. Now, Belden, before you go any further, I want to get Carol into this discussion. And Carol, I think that a lot of people, when they hear the term independent media center, mm-hmm. they think, like Belden was talking about, going back to Seattle in the early part of the last decade, a sort of an alternative media center where anyone could come in and post their stuff and get material out that didn't have to be vetted by traditional news media and cover stories that might not be getting covered widely by traditional news media. And that type of independent media center, from my casual observation, has pretty much declined in importance to some extent because technology has shifted and people can go online and set their own websites and blogs. And there's new technology that makes it a lot easier to post stuff without having to go down to a building in the center of a town and use their website to get on air. And it seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, that what's happened here in Urbana is that our independent media center has evolved into something radically different from what was begun 10 years ago. And the website notion of it is still exists, and it's important, but it's really just a smidgen of what's taking place in that building in downtown Urbana. Tell us what the Independent Media Center is now.
Just for the listeners, I became a member in 2003. Just prior to them actually purchasing the current building that we're located in downtown Urbana. And at that time, I was learning about independent media because I had not heard of this before. I came from Chicago, and mm-hmm. of course, we had all kind of publications, but I wasn't involved in any of them. I've watched the media center, as we do call it, a center, grow from people knowing us as the newspaper, which is the biggest part of getting out to the public, to a completely functioning, everyday, 40 hours a week public setting mm-hmm. where we offer upwards of 7 to 8 programs out of the Independent Media Center. It is important to say that the Independent Media Center in Urbana, though, is the only 501c3.
Mm-hmm.
That's important because we support the efforts of establishing independent media centers all over the world.
Mm.
We have just began working with a new project in Africa. We've had the Sudan. We've had Ghana establishing independent media centers. So,
Kenya,
correct, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Which was last year. So it is important for people to see it as the institution that it actually is, as opposed to just the front of it, which is the independent media portion. We do have other projects that are serving upwards of 110,000 people in a year. We run some 40, 50,000 volunteers.
I'm going, Carol, I'll get on the list here of the activities that take place in the building in downtown Urbana. And it's extraordinary. I mean, just you already mentioned the Public Eye newspaper, the Belden. I assume you're co-editor. I don't want to muscle anyone else.
Co-editor, facilitator.
It's co-everything.
We co-everything.
Yeah, well, our governance is that way. We run completely by committees. We have no CEO. We have no president in it. There are different committees that work on different things. They work by consensus.
Mm-hmm.
We don't take votes, but we get decisions made, and we have been able to expand to all of these operations. We like to serve as a model of democracy and civic engagement,
mm-hmm.
and we try to bring people in to show us that this is possible in our society.
Well, talk a little bit, just for a second, about the Public Eye, which is the newspaper you co-edit that comes out of the IMC, and also the low-power radio station that comes out of the IMC, WRFU.
Yes, well, the Public Eye came first. It's 8 years old now. We call it a monthly, though we do a single edition in the summer and in the wintertime. We're all volunteers. Though we do enjoy the benefit of sharing with the radio station, an AmeriCorps volunteer.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that.
Yeah, I know. That's something of interest to you. Yeah. You mentioned your book.
Exactly.
So we gather together, and our principle is we publish articles that are either written by local people about anything that the local people want to write about, or articles that deal with local issues. So it's got a very local cast to it, though it does carry articles on international issue mm-hmm. if the local writer chooses to do that.
But it's not syndicated stuff from Miami or
New York or
Helsinki.
No, it is not syndicated stuff. I mean, once in a while we will publish material that has appeared before. It's written by a local mm-hmm. writer, Mark Weisbart, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes
sure.
we'll take one of his.
A frequent guest on this program.
Right. Right. Sometimes we'll put an article of his in, even if it's been published by The Guardian.
Because he passed through town once 30 years ago.
Not very. Yeah, right, right. But the idea is to try to develop citizen journalists to encourage people to come.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most satisfying things over the years is that we've gotten high school students to participate and to write. We want to give people the confidence, mm-hmm. and we encourage everybody to submit.
To be a participant, not just a consumer.
To be a participant.
Producer.
And we'll help them. You know, we have people who are willing to edit people's work and help them in doing that. The FM station came later, the low-power FM station. It's a much newer endeavor. And
RFU stands for Radio Free Urbana, I assume?
That's correct. Okay, yes, Radio Free Urbana. And it's 104.5.
Okay.
And we have programming in different languages. We have programming in English, of course. We have programming in Spanish. And we have some programming in German and French as well. We encourage people who want to develop a program to please contact us. We're always looking for more people. And then about once a month now, we have a relationship established between the newspaper and the radio station, what we call writer's block. And we take an article that appears in the newspaper for that month, and we have either the writer of the article or the people about whom the article is come and do an hour program on that.
Our guest, Belden Fields, who you've just been listening to, he is the co-chair of the Sustaining Fund Appeal for the Independent Media Center of Urbana-Champaign, the 10th anniversary right now of the Independent Media Center. There's going to be an open house and tour of the facility in downtown Urbana, the beautiful old post office building. It will be in 13 days from today, Saturday, October 16th, 7 to 9 p.m., an evening show, 202 South Broadway in Urbana. And the goal of the Sustainer Fund Appeal is going to be, I see you set it at $30,000, Belton.
Well, what we're hoping—
I mean, if anyone out there who has a $30,000 in their account just wants to, you know, write a check, they can just have a big party.
That would be nice. Yeah, we're hoping to. There's three aspects. One is to help pay down the mortgage. We have a $192,000 mortgage. The second thing is to underwrite some of the building operational costs. We've got to heat that building. We've got to cool that building in the summer. The building is expensive to maintain.
Sure,
the
post
office has
stayed,
according to the agreement. There is still some of the post office which stays there and functions, but part of the agreement, we get a dollar a year for that. So we really do need a better income stream. And then also emergency funds, that unanticipated thing. As I said, if our boiler goes down, if our roof needs work, things of this nature. So we're hoping that we can get people to agree to a yearly sustaining program. We have different
sort of like public radio or community radio
stations. Yeah, or like Cranor has, or like, you know, I give to a number of institutions.
Sure,
and
many of our listeners do, and hopefully all of them will be giving to this station.
Well, I certainly hope so. I do. I give a lot of money to this station.
I know you do.
For your show, Bob.
And Bob, can I, if I can
please, Carol Ammons, please join in here.
I'd like to, Belden just spoke about the building itself. Just kind of give the listeners, I'm thinking about television all the time, but listeners an idea of what really happens in this building. Mm-hmm. Now, we have an AmeriCorps member who is also a part of our building team. She is a trained building construction management student who graduated from one of our colleges in Illinois. And she's come to build some partnerships to maintain this almost 30,000 square foot building. They do a lot of projects within the building because, of course, it's a volunteer run organization. And what she's been able to do is partner with our Cunningham Township, for instance. We provide opportunities through our AmeriCorps program for township members who receive benefits from our township to be able to work in our facility to meet their obligation to the township. So we have a good four or five people that come from the township to work directly with Mimi, where she trains them then with marketable skills.
Yeah, go ahead, Carol.
We also have a partnership with our local WorkNet Center, which is out of the unemployment office. And we run a summer program with them.
Now, by we, you're talking about the IMC or the AmeriCorps?
We're talking about the Independent Media Center, who is the grantee of the AmeriCorps program.
Okay, yeah, let's back up on that because I think a lot of our listeners might already be in the weeds here.
All right.
You're with AmeriCorps, and you're the supervisor of the volunteers in the AmeriCorps program.
I'm with Independent Media Center.
You're with the Independent Media Center. You supervise the volunteers AmeriCorps provides. I get it. To the IMC. And AmeriCorps is a federal program to put young people to work in communities around the country, as I understand it.
And older people as well.
Young at heart.
It's 18 and over.
Okay.
Yeah. Young at heart, that's right.
And many of them, and this is really striking, are at the IMC now. How many do we have?
We have currently seven AmeriCorps members at the Independent Media Center, and we have three in community partner organizations These are all nonprofit organizations locally here in the community.
Well, let's say what they are. The University YMCA has one of them, and it only has it because of us. Because you need to take it, you need to accept a certain number of AmeriCorps people. You just can't take one or two
for a grant.
So we take the responsibility to make it possible for the University YMCA to have one, and Regional Planning Commission, the County Regional Planning Commission, to have two. So this is part of our outreach and service.
As well as Community Center for the Arts has one.
Yes, and the Community Center for the Arts, which is housed in the IMC.
What this points to is the way the Independent Media Center has now become really more than anything else a great community center, really at the center of Urbana and to a larger extent Urbana-Champaign. And I'm going down the list of some of the groups that work there and some of the activities that go on this building, and it's really quite extraordinary. And the prospect, I must say, that downtown Urbana would have had this building lying fallow or being unused in the center of downtown, like the nucleus of an atom dying, being replaced instead by this center of all this sort of popular activity, citizen activity. It's really pretty incredible. And one of the groups that's involved there, Carol, you're involved with, which is the CU, Citizens for Peace and Justice.
Yes.
You're headquartered in the...
We meet there.
We meet there.
Headquarters is a fancy way to say
But that's a great way to describe it in the sense that the Independent Media Center provides free access space.
That's what I meant.
To community groups like CU, Citizens for Peace and Justice, who does and has been for the last five years at least, been meeting inside of that building, doing citizen engagement and activist activities. And so, again, this is another service that comes from the Independent Media Center for citizen engagement, and it fosters that type of development.
Now, Belden Fields, can anyone come down to the Independent Media Center if they live in the county and participate? Like, can the Tea Party come down and say, we want to do our thing here?
Anybody can come and visit us when our doors are open. I mean, sometimes, you know, the center isn't open. But if you come at open hours, anybody can come and we'll talk to anybody.
Who can they get facilities to have their meetings there and use
it? Well, it's not that you get a facility. It's that you meet there. For example, the Public Eye doesn't have an office. We meet in the library.
Well, here you are demystifying. I thought you had a city room.
No, we do not have a city room. We've got a little space where we meet, but we don't have an office. But I do want to say something else, that the city of Urbana has been really very good. We've cooperated with them. For example, the Public Eye has a program now that is funded by the city of Urbana Arts Council, a grant from the city, where it's called Poetry for the People. We have five sessions, one of which is going to be in Urbana Neighborhood Connections, which is a new program for school-age African-American kids, where they're getting a magnificent summer program and then after-school programs. They are also partially funded by the city of Urbana. So there's these relationships in the arts, in citizen journalism, that are developed as well. And the Community Center for the Arts is housed in the IMC.
Yeah, it's
building.
Extraordinary.
Amazon is housed in the IMC, the singing group, the women's.
Yeah, I didn't think you were the book company. and raise their rent.
And Adnod Music there. And there's a lot of teaching that goes on there in the arts, in painting, in sculpture, in radio station work for young kids.
The list here is amazing. There's no question about it. Again, to repeat for listeners just tuning in, I'm Bob McChesney. This is Media Matters on WILL AM 580, coming to you today, October 3rd, 2010. Our guest, Carol Ammons, who's the supervisor of the AmeriCorps Volunteers for the Independent Media Center, also a member of the Champaign County Board and a co-founder of the CU Citizens for Peace and Justice. She's also the host of the program Higher Ground every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. on WEFT, the local community radio station. And also with us today, Belden Fields, you were just listening to, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at the University of Illinois, co-editor of the Public Eye newspaper, co-chair of the UCIM FMC Radio TV Sustainer Fund Appeal. That's a fancy title. This is the 10th anniversary of the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center, which has become, I think, safe to say, one of the, if not the most impressive independent media centers in the world today, a true leader, and has become a major community center in the heart of downtown Urbana, which links to the whole community. There is a fundraising drive going on to get sustainers to help support the independent media center, and especially to pay off that beautiful post office, which it's buying and trying to maintain and keep alive as a community center. And so they're part of the reason for this program is to alert people that they can participate, become sustainers. And one thing you can do if you want to learn more about the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center is go to their website, ucimc.org, ucimc, that should be
easy.
Just type in ucimc and you'll get it, and you can learn all you want there. Or you can physically come down to the premises, check out the downtown Urbana post office, now community center, independent media center, and that will be 13 days from today, October 16th, 7 to 9 p.m., 202 South Broadway. If you live in the area, you certainly know the building. It's a landmark building in East Central Illinois, and you can check it out. They do need money to pay for that building, to keep the services alive, and the extraordinary range, again, of activities that go on inside that facility. It's really become sort of the heart of Urbana in many respects.
I think so. Well, not only Urbana, Champaign-Urbana, because a lot of the people who work in there are from Champaign.
I mean, I'm just trying to give Urbana some props here. You know,
it deserves it. It's smaller, but it's mightier in some senses.
Ooh. you just lost some donations from Champaign right there.
One of the wonderful things about the Independent Media Center is, as Belden mentioned, the city of Urbana is a great supporter of the Independent Media mm-hmm. Center. This past May, we had, due to one of our AmeriCorps mm-hmm. members, which is our all-age venue coordinator, we hosted a children's arts festival, which was the first that had been done in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And that arts festival hosted upwards of 250 children. We had 30-plus volunteer programmers that programmed things from cultural arts and dance, sculpture making, small arts and crafts. We had presentations. The entire day, we had people coming in and out of the space. We were able to partner then with some of the other community mm-hmm. groups like Mo Better Music, that is sponsored also by the U of I. And so that's another activity that took place, but we got that support again from the city of Urbana. We also get quite a bit support from the Illinois Arts Council, mm-hmm. Who really should be supported from our state because it supports independent media center activities all over our community. And so that Illinois Arts Council grant that the Independent Media Center also receives sponsors many of our programs and helps us sustain our activity.
As I listen to you right now, Carol Ammons, and I go down the list here, what's striking about all the activities that are taking place at the Independent Media Center, as far as I can tell, is there's very few of them are sort of audience watching someone do something. It's much more about bringing people in to learn how to use computers, learn how to write, mm-hmm. learn how to dance, write poetry, make music. It's all about participation.
Exactly. That's the fundamental premise of this. I mean, every year I give a seminar to the Freeman scholars who come from China.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things – and I give it on human rights. And mm-hmm. one of the things that I stress with them is the importance of civil society.
Yeah.
Where people – if you're going to have a democracy and if you're going to have human rights, you need space for people to work autonomously, to bring people in to do things they maybe never thought that they can do. And that's why I devote so much time in my retirement to mm-hmm. the UCIMC, because I think it's a wonderful experiment in participation and in democracy, and in civic commitment. So I would like to say one other thing about our open house.
Please do.
Anybody can come. You don't have to commit to be a sustainer in order to come. We want people to come in and
see what
we're doing. Just check it out. Now, for people who do decide they want to give, if they give at least the 500 level, we have a marvelous artist, Benjamin, who is from the Cameroon, who does beautiful paintings.
Mm-hmm.
And the first 500, the first 20 people
did
a great, no, the first 20 people will get one of Benjamin's paintings. I have two hanging in my house. They're remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
We provide Benjamin and another artist from Tunisia free studio space in our building because they can't afford anything but free studio space.
Mm-hmm.
We have other artists that we rent studios to for very low amounts of money to
help
us going.
That's great. Again, this program is pre-recorded. I know there are people I want to call and ask lots of questions. So don't call in today. Let us do the talking. And remember that it will be 13 days from today, Saturday, October 16th, 7 to 9 p.m., that the IMC will be holding its open house and tour of the facility. If you haven't been there, I urge you to go just to check it out, just to see what's going on. It is really this program oftentimes features a rather gloomy perspective on the world, I've been told, given the nature of the world today. And so it's always heartening to see people in a community come together to do something very constructive, very positive that changes their community for the better. And that's what from what I can see, this IMC is doing.
Can I do one more thing, a bragging thing? Because I think they need to be recognized.
Sure,
and that's
do.
Our Books to Prisoners program.
Yeah, in fact, I was going to ask you about that. It's
yes,
first
that
on the
won
list.
The 2009 Governor's Hometown Award.
Mm-hmm.
This sends books. It both sends books to prisoners in prisons all over Illinois. They write in and say what they want, and they try to find the book or what kind of book they want. They try to find the sorts of books to send them.
I think all my remaindered books have been sent out to that program. Probably
have.
Yeah.
And also, they have libraries. They have established libraries in our two county jails.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an important point.
It's very important.
I couldn't agree more.
We have an AmeriCorps member who helps coordinate those volunteers.
Yeah.
And in our county jail, it saves the county, of course, the cost of having to do that themselves or not provide the service at all. And so we have volunteer librarians, many of them from GISLIS at the University of Illinois, and they give time to these projects. And so it's a remarkable place. I think people should, if anything, come to the celebration on the 16th.
I think that program alone, you don't even have to go past that to say this is an extraordinary services being provided to this community.
Absolutely.
I have a friend, an author, doesn't live in the area. He lives in St. Louis now, but I talked to him at length, and he's not especially politically oriented at all, and you wouldn't know it from his work. But for some reason, several years ago, he ended up going to give a talk at a prison. He was asked to come in some prison. He's a fairly well-known mystery writer. And he was struck by, one, how hungry the people he spoke to were to read stuff, and two, how much illiteracy there was in prison.
Yes.
He was absolutely flabbergasted at the degree of illiteracy. People just couldn't read. So he's devoted in his free time, when he's not writing, all his energy now goes into helping literacy programs in prisons and getting reading materials. So when I heard about the Books for Prisoners, it instantly connected that this was a major crisis that in our society that's untalked about and unaddressed.
Do you know the book that's asked for most? Dictionary.
Really?
We get the most requests for the dictionary. It's a wonderful place, and we can go on and on.
Isn't that how Malcolm X educated
himself?
He read
the dictionary
and just went word page by page?
I do want to just say for the listeners, we are continually growing the program. People come in with ideas, and that's a place that they can foster them. We have had this year, we've added an additional program, which is called the Independent Media Center Help Desk. Our computer help desk is set up. It's free service. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, people can come into the Independent Media Center, bring their computers. They don't know what's wrong with them. And our AmeriCorps member and volunteers, again, they help teach people about maintaining their computers, how to get them working. But they also teach them software applications, teach them how to use social mm-hmm. media. And so these are things that are being offered at the Independent Media Center for free to the public. And because of the AmeriCorps program, we're able to maintain and sustain these this level of service. And so it has been a really great year for the Independent Media Center.
Now, I guess if we raise enough money on this this program on October 16th to sustain our fund appeal, you'll be able to give yourself a raise, Belden, over there.
Oh, no.
Yes, I will go from zero to zero.
Zero.
100%. I mean, I want to make that point simply is that aside from the IMC members, It's not like the money that's being given goes to someone's, you know, holiday trip to Bell Harbor, Florida,
oh, no.
Sit in a hot tub and do cocaine or something.
No, absolutely not.
We're always just operating, you know, sort of from
this goes
day
directly to,
day.
To pay down a mortgage, to pay a heating bill, to really the facilities management.
Exactly, and if we can get help on that, then some of the other money that we're having to put into that would be released for more programs,
mm-hmm.
and also getting better equipment. Our equipment is getting pretty old. It's not as up to date as it should be. I'm talking about our computers. And,
sure.
I wanted to point out, I'm glad you raised the issue of money, because this is a really big one in our economy that we mm-hmm. experience right now. We have right now a cash operating expense of a little bit over $200,000, but we receive...
Annually?
This is annually.
Well, that's not much at all.
No. We run on a very shoestring budget now.
Being involved with many groups, I can assure our listeners... That's
not
even a shoestring. That's like a shoe, you know, strand.
No, a piece of string.
Yeah.
We don't put a lot of money into personnel expenses, unlike most programming.
Yeah.
We receive a good portion of what we utilize in in-kind contributions.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is important for people to understand that this program's not long enough to explain all of this for the Independent Media Center, but we spend, I would say, more 70-80% of our funds directly on programming. That is a very small shoestring budget.
Yeah.
And so to be able to raise the funds to pay down the mortgage, to address some institutional problems with the building. It is a historical site. Replacing windows in that building, for instance, would cost more than our annual budget.
Well, I think our listeners have got the idea. If they're going to give money there, they know where to go. They know it's not going to go to someone's bank account in Switzerland or Bermuda.
No.
Belden, back 10 years ago when the IMC started in Urbana, there was a wave of IMCs launched in community after community in this country. Most of them, to my knowledge, if they haven't gone completely under and out of business, are paper thin. They barely exist. Only a few exceptions. Urbana really is sort of this crown jewel that has made this transition from website, amateur website with sort of open access to anyone who wants to get something on the internet, through the blogosphere, social network era, to becoming a full-fledged physical community center, which is not a digital institution but a human being, flesh and blood institution. Are there any other IMCs in the country that have made the same transition as Urbana-Champaign, or are we pretty much sort of out there alone circling the earth?
I cannot tell you definitively because I'm not familiar with the other IMCs. I know that the IMC in Chicago has nothing comparable
mm-hmm.
to what we
there. There
have.
Isn't an IMC comparable to the Independent Media Center here in Urbana-Champaign.
Yeah, and I say that as one who travels a bit and comes in contact with people doing independent media all the time. And I must say that Urbana just constantly comes back as the one place that sort of made this great successful transition and is living in the future, not the past. And the ones that were still just doing websites have, for the most part, lost their reason for existence. And
that's unfortunate.
Unfortunate, but I mean, I think the rise of the blogosphere has meant people don't need to go down to that mm-hmm. building to post their stuff. They can start a blog or they can put up their own website.
And I don't know how to explain this. All I can say is that at the very beginning, there were people with incredible imaginations. I think people like Sasha Meinrath and Danielle Shinowitz
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
some of the other people who were here locally who were
Mike
thinking,
Lane, right?
Mike Lane, who were
absolutely.
Thinking.
No, it's a very impressive group of people. It took dedication to keep it and sacrifice. And I think that one way people in our community can understand the IMC is that it has been a very patriotic duty by people who believe in this community to create it, and a great sacrifice, never personal gain. And also, even more impressively, no personal glory. This is not a bunch of people running around naming rooms after themselves or demanding their attention. I suspect if you hadn't mentioned Sasha's name or Danielle's and their crucial role, you know, they wouldn't be calling up saying, why didn't you, you know, do a 10-minute special on how much I sacrificed?
Right, right.
I mean, they're very self-effacing.
You know, I don't think that the people who work at the IMC see it as a sacrifice.
That's right.
I think that they see it as really very fulfilling, and it is a way that they get gratification by making a contribution to the community.
Right now, we've only got about 10, 12 minutes left in the show, and I'd like to turn to a couple of the activities that take place at the Independent Media Center that each of you are personally involved in that play a very important role in this community, and just give you a chance to talk about those groups specifically so people get a taste of what goes on there. And I'll start with you, Belden, because the Socialist Forum is a group I know you've been involved with a long time. And,
yeah.
And talk a little bit about that. And it seems like the socialism, the name's getting a little more currency nowadays.
Well, it is getting more currency. The phrase "now we are all socialists" in the early days of the Obama thing that you had heard. I think one of the difficulties for people who consider themselves to be socialists, and I consider myself to be a democratic socialist, which is why I'm so taken to this kind of participation. Mm-hmm. This is for me. I'm not a socialist who thinks that big government is the answer to everything. I mm-hmm. don't. Mm-hmm. I think that people, and here I can join with libertarian people, and I can join with even some of the more conservative people who place importance on autonomous activity within the communities. My concern as a socialist is really a concern with the constellation of power in the society, mm-hmm. that it has become so concentrated that the corporations, the financial industries, the insurance industries, the health insurance industries have found ways really to control the politics that we have. And, of course, the recent Supreme Court decision.
Citizens United. Yeah.
Yeah, was just devastating in that regard. So I think that people have a mistaken notion, have had a mistaken notion of what socialists meant. They thought of totalitarian socialism like Russia or China or other places. But the history of socialism in the United States, and I gave courses on socialism in which I go over the mm-hmm. history, has not been that at all. It's not been that they want government to control everything. It has been more people empowering themselves.
Up, yeah.
As opposed to being controlled. Power to the people themselves rather than power over the people by these distant structures.
So what is the Socialist Forum and what does it do?
Socialist Forum is a group, it's a small group, that comes together and discusses certain ideas about how we conceive of socialism and also about how the ideas that we have could be applied to certain things in our society. And we have spun off a number of things. Originally, the idea of a living wage campaign mm-hmm. that I co-chaired in this county. It was discussed in socialist form. And then we went out to other people who are not socialists. And we said, you know, wouldn't this appeal to every fair-minded mm-hmm. person? You know, we're not expecting you to have to call yourself a socialist just because we call ourselves socialist, and wouldn't this be an important thing mm-hmm. To work on? So the people who had been involved or who still are involved in socialist form, they have gone into a number of areas that involve social justice and human rights, and they have worked in those areas. We're not all doctrinaire. We don't care whether the other people we work with consider themselves to be socialists or not. What mm-hmm. we're concerned about is advancing the cause of social justice.
I see. And Carol, you are connected to and involved with and co-chair of the CU Citizens for Peace and Justice.
Right.
And that's what I want to – I figure when in doubt, say co.
Co-everything.
Co-everything. But you're with the Citizens for Peace and Justice. What's the origins of that group? What does it do? And what's your take on the world today in that order?
We actually started in 2003. I'm glad Belden is here today, which is, I guess, irony for me. But I actually attended one of his presentations at the University YMCA. I had mm-hmm. just come to the community a little bit before that. And it was on human rights when he was talking about his book, Rethinking Human Rights. And so I attended that talk and I said, wow, you know, this is something that, you know, I was involved in Chicago. Wow, this is some group here. They got to be doing something here in this community. And so that was my first engagement here, meeting Belden. In about 2003, Dr. Henry, who was at that time the superintendent of schools in Champaign, the school board decided to abruptly terminate her. And I began to work with the then NAACP leadership. From that, we realized that there was a gap in the community that dealt with social justice, civil rights, that we wanted to do, but we didn't have a name for it. And so a few of us got together and came up with this idea of CU Citizens for Peace and Justice to really focus on some of the criminal aspects that were taking place in our community. In 2004, then we had Citizen Watch that was coming out of VIA, which was a separate organization, that needed support because two young men decided that they would videotape the interactions of the police in the local community.
I recall that.
And out of that, we began to really grow and sustain movement for SCU Citizens. We've done many campaigns relating to our county jail, the phone contract, the unfortunate incident when
The phone contract, just to be clear, that was when the prisoners or people in the jail were being charged extraordinarily high rates.
And our county was receiving kickbacks from that phone company to do this.
Yeah,
and so
outrage.
We organized and to stop that practice. And so we've been organizing on many campaigns since 2004 that helped people locally. Whether it was the unfortunate incident, Ms. Davis' house was shot up into by Champaign police as they pursued a suspect directly into this lady's house, and they began to shoot into the house, not knowing whether there were people inside. I mean, just these type of decisions from local officials. And so we've been working ever since then. We've also grown as an organization, I would say, from our beginnings. To protesting, which we will do that still, injustices, to writing recommendations to public bodies for policy change. And so we've done that in the last several years and sustained our work, I would say largely in part to having a consistent place to meet at the Independent Media Center. And we've had long-term volunteers who are committed to this idea of social justice.
So having the IMC exist and having the post office, owning that building as a facility, has been pretty important for both the groups you just talked about, for
their
ability to function, operate, organize, draw people in.
Yes.
And the reason it's important is these are just two out of dozens of groups and organizations and activities that rely on rent-free utilization of this magnificent space to survive, grow, and prosper.
Now, well, some groups do pay a bit of rent.
Okay. Well, good. Well, that's the ones that can afford it.
Yeah.
So two. None of the groups either you would ever be connected with, I suspect. Well, the question I want to get to is a central one. I alluded to it earlier, Belden Fields, which is, you know, both groups you've just mentioned are very progressive politically, very human rights oriented, would be considered by traditional American classification liberal or left or progressive or in one case socialist. You know, but IMCs were founded on the idea, as I understood it, of being sort of open to all commerce, community station, you know. But I mean, what do you ever have like the neo-Nazis of Illinois march in and say, now it's our turn to have our rally here? Or say more appropriately, that's an extreme case. Let's say the Tea Party. Let's say a Tea Party says we want to have our meeting in the, you know, and many people in your group might say, well, I don't really like these guys at all. This isn't what we had in mind. What happens if they show up at the door?
Well, I don't know because they haven't done it. And I can't tell you because, as I say, the decisions are made communally. What I can tell you is that there is a church that meets, an African-American church that meets there on Sundays. And many of our people are atheists or agnostics or not Christians or so on.
Right, Muslim.
And we never – we never have said to them, you can't have the space because we don't believe the way they believe. But there's one point that I think is another point that's really important is that all kinds of people are there. African-American people, Asian people, Latino people. This is a space where everybody can come and feel comfortable, and we're constantly interacting intensively with one another.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in a And
so I hear you say, so basically it's a space for everyone who doesn't think they have a space somewhere else. This is the place they go.
And even if they've got a space somewhere else and they want to come and share our space, they're welcome. But the point is, we are incredibly diverse kinds of people. And I've known a lot of organizations in my – I've lived here since 1965. And I can only point to a few organizations. They're as diverse as we are. I think Champaign County Healthcare Consumers is one of those. Mm-hmm. And, in fact, it is the other one that I would look at and say, you know, that is a model of how people can really get along together and work together. And I think we're a second model.
Well, Carol, maybe you can answer this, or Belden. Has there ever been in the history of the IMC like a group that's come, I want to use it, and there's a meeting of the board said, no, we don't want these guys in here?
Not to my knowledge. I've not experienced it in my
– So basically that's a purely moot point or hypothetical.
Yeah.
Well, up to this point, yeah.
Certainly it's hypothetical.
Yeah. No one, so it's basically an open community center.
And we've had people who don't agree with CU Citizens, for instance, come to our meetings and dialogue with us. Mm-hmm. We've had elected officials come and we talk about very hard issues. And so it is open. The space as far as discussion is open. Mm-hmm. And we will certainly entertain – people's ideas. Will they be comfortable meeting in our space? Will our steering group say, well, you know, we don't want this group meeting our space? We don't know. We've not been posed that question.
I'm Bob McChesney. You've been listening for the last hour or so to our guests, Belden Fields and Carol Ammons, talking about the 10th anniversary of the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center. There's going to be a huge celebration, an open house and tour of the facility 13 days from today, Saturday, October 16th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the UCIMC in the post office in downtown Urbana, 202 South Broadway. They're looking for donations and sustainers to help keep the institution alive, thriving, and growing. We've been talking about it this hour. So you can go down to that event or go to the website, which is simply ucimc.org, and learn all you need to know about it. Belden Fields, in our last minute or so, can you just give some sense of what people will see if they were to come in 13 days to check out the IMC in downtown
Urbana? Well, they will see the facilities that we have there. They will see the performance stage and hall that we have, which is actually very impressive. It's a very large performance space. They will see the gallery, the exhibition gallery, where we have art exhibits that we put up and where Books for Prisoners has their yearly book sale. They can go down to the Books for Prisoners space, which is very interesting down there, where all the books are cataloged and so on, and the letters are read and the packages are prepared to be shipped out. They can go to the bike co-op, where they can, it's a very large space down there, mm-hmm. where they will see a place where people learn how to repair their bikes, how to build their own bikes, mm-hmm. where they can mm-hmm. buy a bike reasonably. They will see the artwork that we have up there.
And let me cut you off there because we've only got about 35 seconds left. I think people get the taste. But, I mean, also I want to conclude with Carol. What would you say to someone who's listening to the show in the community who's never been connected to the Independent Media Center at all, hardly knows anything about it? Why should they get involved?
I think they should get involved because they also have something to bring to the Independent Media Center. As you spoke of earlier, our center is designed to teach people how to do things, right? And people bring their skills to the table. And so we're always open to new ideas, new opportunities for our community. And so the Independent Media Center serves as that hub for education to take place.
Well, thank you so much, Carol Ammons, Belden Fields, for joining me
thank
today.
You, Bob.
And again, to remind everyone, Saturday, October 16th, 7 to 9 p.m., there will be the fundraising event, but you don't have to pay to go. Just check it out at the IMC in the post office in downtown Urbana. I'm Bob McChesney. I want to thank Mike Pritchard for taping today's program, Melissa Trentz, my producer. And I will be back in 1 week from today with Lewis Hyde. Have a great week, everyone.